This audio is brought to you by MuslimCentral.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome to an episode of Tag Along. I am your host, Bilal Khan. Here we have with us Haseeb Noor, coming out from Medina en route to San Diego. Haseeb's in town just putting together some material for recording. He's teaching a class on, and I'm going to go with the title that we discussed, so initially came up with the idea, let's call it Succession, which is cool. Mm-hmm. The rise of Abu Bakr and Umar. If I were to ask you, you would break this class down into its four parts, how would you break it down?
Well, after the passing of the Prophet ﷺ, the Prophet ﷺ himself gave us, you know, solace and comfort that there will be 30 years of succession of righteous khulafa, which are people who succeed him. And this era will be filled with justice, will be filled with positive, even though he said that the most, you know, the worst calamity to befall the Muslim ummah will be his passing.
Okay.
So he gives a prophecy even before he passes away, which is that the Prophet ﷺ will succeed those.
For 30, well, they'll have good times for
30 years. 30 years. And then will be corrupt monarchy.
Okay.
So there's 30 years of everything will be good. And
did he say corrupt monarchy?
Yes.
Or did he say, like, what was the word?
There's multiple narrations. Okay. One of them says, "Mulkan adban," which means a monarchy which will be of oppression and corruption.
Okay.
And another narration says kingdom.
Okay.
So kingdom will come after that. So then the scholars discuss what that means.
Okay.
But in discussion of succession, the Prophet ﷺ himself would say that those who came after him for 30 years will be the righteous successors. And that is why this class is called Succession, the rise of Abu Bakr and Umar, because the first one to kind of take the flame of the Prophet ﷺ's legacy in his own hand was Abu Bakr radiallahu anhu.
Sure.
And he handed it off to Umar. And this is where you see like the height, building up to the height of Islamic rule.
Islamic succession.
That's exactly it. Yeah.
Yes.
There's a lot of succession going on. Right?
Not Islamic rule.
Right. Islamic succession.
Okay.
Right.
Now, what inspired the name Succession itself?
This hadith of the Prophet ﷺ, that there will come after me khilafah. And oftentimes when we say caliphate, you know, there's all these images that come to your mind.
Well, the word, it's interesting in Oriental studies, they always put eight.
Right,
Sultan eight, Khan eight, caliphate.
Right.
But I think anything that's not European, they'll add eight to it.
So there's an element of Orientalism, as you mentioned.
Yeah.
So what it actually means is a sessions of istikhlaf in Arabic, which means to succeed, to inherit. So it has such a beautiful meaning in Arabic that the Prophet ﷺ was speaking about the inheritance of prophethood.
Okay.
And he's speaking about the succession of prophethood. So I was like, you know what? Let's take back our own narrative. Stop saying caliphate. Let's say succession, like the Prophet ﷺ meant.
I like the word succession, and I don't know if this is appropriate within the lexicon of English, within the English language, but the success and succession, are they related?
I don't know the epistemology of it, but it could be a lot.
Cool, because that's why, I mean, when you think about it, success sounds great.
Right.
Succession is like this
success. What continues success. Yeah,
exactly.
So there you go.
So continuing success.
Right.
The rise of Abu Bakr and Umar.
Right.
Cool. So, what now, as I understand it, right, the succession of Abu Bakr himself was just maybe over 2 years or under 2 years?
Right.
Right?
Right.
And then Umar bin Khattab, his succession lasted, what, like 12 years?
10 years.
Right? 10 years. Yeah. 10 to 12, something somewhere around that.
12 years, yeah.
So how do you intend on presenting, like, what you're going to have? Like, that's like 12, like, if we're talking a total of, say, 12 years, maybe, right, including Abu Bakr and Umar together.
Mm-hmm.
So is that, like, 2 hours of the classes Abu Bakr and the 10 hours of the classes Umar bin Khattab?
No, well, the class will be broken down in a sense, more focus on the elements of success in their rule. In the time that they were rulers of the Muslim empire.
Okay.
What made them who they were.
Sure.
So this will not necessarily be a timeline kind of class where we go through the entire timeline as it was. So we have to focus much more on Umar. It's rather what made them great. What brought about that greatness.
So I would assume then a lot of what made Abu Bakr great was the fact that he had the closest proximity to the Prophet ﷺ, in his life, considering he became Muslim before any of the other Khulafa Rashidin, right?
Exactly. Right.
In addition to that, he also had, I guess, more FaceTime with the Prophet Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam. And so I'm guessing you're going to cover a lot of that before he becomes Khalifa.
Right. And that's what's so important, because sometimes when people discuss individuals, we don't talk about, you know, who are the main personas or people that influenced those individuals to become who they were.
Okay.
We only talk about Abu Bakr and Umar in their proximity to the Prophet Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam.
Okay.
So what we're going to do is actually look at how they were in the life of the Prophet. What did the Prophet Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam impart to these two individuals, which made them the best of successors?
Okay.
So that's where we're going to go.
Now, so having that said, it would actually make more sense to give Abu Bakr even more screen time than just, or class time, then what, like a few hours?
Exactly.
Right. So I'm now, are you splitting it up like day one, day two, like Abu Bakr and then Umar?
No, it's going to be pretty much almost exactly even.
Okay.
It's going to be discussing the role of Abu Bakr and the discipline of the Prophet ﷺ in his life.
Okay.
And the influence that Abu Bakr actually had on the life of the Prophet
ﷺ. Okay.
And that's like an amazing concept of how this man actually influenced also the Prophet
ﷺ. Okay.
And like Allah brought this man as to be the best companion.
Okay.
So we're going to discuss the life of Abu Bakr radiallahu anhu in relationship to the life of the Prophet ﷺ.
Okay.
Then we're going to talk about his life.
Yeah.
And then transition to obviously his passing and some of the legacy that he left behind.
Sure.
And what events happened in his rule. And then move on to Umar radiallahu anhu, who do the same exact thing.
Okay. So are you presenting the two stories independently but parallel to each other?
Yes. No, but there's going to be elements of parallel discussion.
Okay. Well. Because the way I'm seeing is like when you're presenting the story of Abu Bakr and his rise, that's one timeline, but that timeline overlaps a lot with the timeline of Umar ibn Khattab.
Right.
So, but you're telling them to independently.
No. What I'm going to do is speak about them when it comes time to them independently.
Yeah. Okay.
But you're going to follow along one story with both of these two characters.
So is I'm just imagining now, because generally, sometimes some of the best stories that I've read is when you're following two people. Mm-hmm. It's not good guy or bad guy.
Right.
But rivals. Mm-hmm. You get what I'm saying?
Right.
Because they were kind of like rivals, right?
No. They had a sense of rivalry, which I think we may misunderstand and say it's bad rivalry.
No, I'm not. But it's not. I'm saying a positive
rivalry. Positive rivalry. Yeah. Yeah. For sure.
They had a very positive rivalry amongst each other to succeed in their deeds, so to speak, right?
100%. Yeah, true.
So, and I'm just wondering if that's an element that you kind
competitiveness,
of...
Competitiveness,
maybe. Yes.
They had a sense of competitiveness.
Rivalry comes through competitive.
I agree.
So, I'm just wondering, is that something that's going to be simply touched upon?
No, we're going to discuss their lives and, you know, how they were together and when did they come in the life of the Prophet Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam and lived among the life of the Prophet Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam and some of the things that made them human.
Okay.
Right? So there's moments where you're just going to be like, I would have never, you know.
What's an example of that?
When Abu Bakr and Umar radiallahu anhu started to argue over a decision with regards to choosing a person who would be a commander or a leader in an expedition at the Prophet Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam.
Are we talking about Khalid ibn Walid?
No, this is not Khalid ibn Walid. This is with regards to the expedition that would be sent to Najd, which is Riyadh area.
Okay.
So basically... Abu Bakr radiallahu anhu picks a person.
Okay.
And then Umar radiallahu anhu says, no, I don't think he's good. Pick this one, Ya Rasulullah.
Yeah.
And Abu Bakr literally like screams out saying, you just said that just to disagree with me.
Okay.
Like that's all you want to do.
Okay.
And it was literally in that tone. And the Prophet ﷺ just kind of smiled, but Umar radiallahu anhu responded to him.
Yeah.
And then they started to go at it with one another until the Prophet ﷺ got up and left. And he's like, I'm not going to sit here when there's disagreement. And there's such powerful lessons, as much as it's amazing to see the human nature of these people, right? Because sometimes what we do is we think they're so beyond, you know, measure that we can't relate to.
Right.
Right. So the Prophet ﷺ comes back and the Quran was actually revealed that don't raise your voices in the presence of the Prophet ﷺ.
Oh.
And Umar radiallahu anhu, after that, it hit him so hard
that
every time he was in the masjid, he would not raise his voice even after the Prophet ﷺ's passing.
Okay.
Even though it wasn't talking about necessarily, literally the voice, but as well as figuratively.
You know, would this be one of the reasons why, because Rasulullah mentioned about Umar bin Khattab,
right,
how he's a door against fitna,
right,
and that door would be broken.
Right.
So, and part of that characteristic of being a door against, what would be the appropriate word for fitna? And if you were to describe it in English, even if you were to put it into a sentence.
You know, adversity, I think, is a very good word.
Okay. Adversity, I mean, oppression.
Hardship, difficulties, adversity.
Okay.
A lot of times people use, and I know you don't like this word, tribulation.
Right? Yeah. Nobody knows what that means.
Tribulation, like a trial or, yeah, what they use the word in two, like trials and tribulation. So basically just overwhelming difficulty.
Okay.
Is a good way to put it.
So is part of that.
And confusion. That's part of it.
Okay. Yeah. So he's basically, it seems though, through his life,
right,
he does things to not only prevent him or block the means of doing something, mm-hmm, but even a step forward, like before, where there's even a buffer before they even get to,
right, exactly,
get to that. Like
before,
like,
it even gets to the problem, yeah, he solves the problem. He cuts it at the end, maybe literally sometimes.
And
right, so that's this Umar radiallahu
anhu. Yeah. So whereas Abu Bakr wasn't necessarily like that. He seemed to be the more easygoing.
He had in Arabic something called hilm, which is forbearance, or just to let people like kind of learn from their mistakes.
Okay.
Like, you know, that person that just like sits back and just lets you.
It's like it's like the father, you know, the joke where, oh my God, don't let the kid touch the stove or the iron, right?
Right.
Right. And then the mother comes home, is like, right, what happened to our son? It's like, oh, he learned what hot is today.
Exactly. That's basically Abu Bakr radiallahu
anhu. Okay.
And not only that, but he had, if you could put it in two central like kind of discussions, Abu Bakr had decentralized leadership.
Yeah.
And Umar radiallahu anhu had centralized leadership, meaning he was the one who was kind of loved to take control.
He's more of a micromanager.
Right.
Okay.
Radiallahu anhu.
not a bad thing.
No, of course. It's a good thing.
Yeah, I mean,
thing.
Some people are really good at and strong, right, in micromanagement.
And it depends on the situation. Right?
Yeah.
So if you just let people go,
yeah,
and they are not ready for that, right? That's a bad
thing. And I think this is where the strength of leadership also comes into play, is as a micromanager, you can afford to put people into position when, right, they're not ready for it. But, right, through that micromanagement,
right,
you develop them.
Exactly.
Whereas Abu Bakr Siddiq, he won't put somebody into a position, right, unless they're ready for it.
Right.
And that allows him to not micromanage, right, and allows him to decentralize.
Right. And the amazing thing that you mentioned, we learn the different types of leadership personas, which shows you, like, leadership is not one format.
Right.
A lot of times when we look at the life of the Prophet ﷺ, people use his example and saying, look how the Prophet ﷺ was.
Yeah.
And that's excellent. But we don't look at how the Prophet ﷺ bred leaders as well.
So this is a question about, okay, we see the example of the Prophet ﷺ breeding leadership.
Mm-hmm.
And these two individuals, what this seminar is going to be about, knowing very clearly what kind of leadership that they do in their own style. They know themselves. They're very self-aware in that regard.
Right, right.
But the question now I have is, and I'm assuming this is going to be part of your class, how does the attendee, how does me not, and let's assume I don't know what my style of leadership is.
Right.
How does an individual identify that within themselves,
right,
and then appropriately deploy that? So, right, knowing that if one is a strong micromanager,
right,
not to take the approach of a laissez-faire decentralized approach,
right,
or to know that if they're not a good micromanager, they would rather, but to, like, how does one be self-aware about oneself in their leadership ability?
Well, that's the beautiful thing of why it's so important for us to actually learn it through the life of these individuals, right? They learn that the highest form of liberation is liberating from your own self.
Okay.
And understanding who you are is what made them great. And
sure.
Be able to be leaders of others.
Okay.
So, I mean, the first step of a person listening to this class, we're going to go through some exercises which help you to really sit down and be honest with yourself. I think honesty is the first aspect.
Yeah.
You have to realize what are your strengths.
You got to be real.
Right. And you have to be real with yourself.
Yeah.
I mean, and we're living in a time of, you know, unfortunately, social media has made this projection of everything, right?
Filtered.
Right. What you project to others is now, and it's statistically been shown, this is what people care about most now.
What do you mean?
What their perception of who they are is to others on social media.
You know, it's interesting that you mentioned this, because on one side of the spectrum, you have people trying to put forth a particular persona that,
right,
it's not authentic at all,
right,
right? On the other side of the opposite spectrum, which I also don't think is appropriate,
right,
is they say, be yourself, right?
Right.
And the reason I don't feel that's appropriate is because, right, one shouldn't put publicly who you are now, Mm-hmm. But rather what you are truly aspiring authentically to be. Mm-hmm. You get what I'm saying?
No. But
okay. So we were talking, so one idea would be like, so you're working on this project called the Legacy Project, right? And one of the things is like, you don't want to put any of the content, the stuff out there until it's ready.
Right.
Right. And I was mentioning, like, right, you don't have to put it out right now because it's not ready, but you can document the process.
Yeah.
You can showcase what you're doing
and
how you're doing.
And you can authentically basically present that.
Yes.
I agree with that. Yeah.
100%. So it's like, look, I'm not here yet. Mm-hmm. This is what I want to be.
Right.
Right?
Right.
I'm no expert right now.
Right.
I'm not like whatever, but that's the path I'm going in. That's what I want to be.
I understand.
Who I am today is not where I'm going.
I understand. Yeah. That's pretty cool. Yeah.
Whereas people are like, and other people
like this
like,
is how great I am now.
Or like I am going to do all these things and I'm going to showcase my vices because that's who I am. Wrong. If I don't showcase my vices.
I feel you. Yeah. So like I agree with that. Yeah.
So and I think that's the appropriate balance. And I'm wondering if there's some aspect of that
in the class.
Yeah.
100%.
Okay.
What you will see is Abu Bakr and Umar radiallahu anhu raw.
Yeah.
You know, uncut how they developed and overcame some of those things because they were so authentic to themselves. And the interesting thing is not necessarily that they were trying to aspire to become the leader of the entire Muslim frame, right?
Right.
But at the same time, what the Prophet ﷺ intrinsically, you know, ingrained in them for them to be ready for that.
Okay.
So when it came to them, they recognized it, that this is leadership they shouldn't reject.
Sure.
And this is all from the prophetic discipline.
Okay.
So that's the beautiful thing as a person. When you look at how they developed and were honest with themselves and how they liberated kind of their own thought, their own perceptions and their own kind of view, when leadership came to them, they were ready for it.
Got it.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, guys, thanks for joining in on this episode. We're going to be probably doing many more, several more, just discussing this topic. Stay tuned. Assalamu alaikum.
Assalamu alaikum.